Glad that you joined the program. I'm Dr. Robin Gould, and I'm going to be taking you through the next couple hours as we discuss some very interesting things that I think will bless you. I'm glad that you've joined us on this lovely day. It's a beautiful day. I'm here in Florida, and it's a beautiful 74 degrees, and I wonder where you are. I know a lot of places are in a deep freeze, having a lot of snow. If that's you, I hope that you're cozy in front of your fire or you're just relaxing in some warm place and able to have a moment to just sit back and kind of let your mind and your heart combine as you can absorb this message that I pray will bless your life. So I'm glad you're here. This is the Becky Book Show. So let me first tell you a little bit about who I am, and then I'm going to tell you about what Becky Books are in case you are new to the program. I am Dr. Robin Gould, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I am a doctor of religious education, so I like to teach about the Father, and always from a relational standpoint, being a marriage and family therapist. That's a systemic discipline of psychology, so the word psychology can scare some people. It just means the study of the mind and the way the mind and the heart operate. And there's a lot of really crazy throughout the window psychology. And there's actually some that reflect the creator's design and the biblical narrative of the human being. So that's what I like to focus on. So I'm glad you're here. And I'll let you know a little bit about what Becky Books are. Becky, B-E-K-Y. Stands for Building and Encouraging the Kingdom of Yeshua. And that's what these books are designed to do. They're to build and they are to encourage the kingdom. And a lot of times people will have friends and family and they are not sufficiently acquainted with some of the nuances of the belief in the Torah being relevant today. Some people might call it Hebrew roots. Some people might call it Messianic Judaism. Whatever you call it or the way that you want to say it, there are a lot of people that are very lost in translation there. They don't understand why you've changed your lifestyle. What are your beliefs? Maybe you're even a seasoned believer in some Torah and you would like to go in depth into some of the topics. Well, that's what the Becky books are for. These books are written by women. And they are written from a very friendly and palatable perspective, friendly, non-judgmental, not threatening. And they cover some of the simple and even the more complex topics of the Torah, things that people need to learn, things like the Sabbath, things like tradition. Is it wrong? Is it right? How can you tell which is right, which is wrong? Divorce and remarriage in the Bible. We have three books on the dietary laws coming from different angles, Peter's vision, Colossians 2:16. We also have one that kind of goes through one of my books, covers the basic dietary law arguments and debunks a lot of myths that people have believed about the New Testament until they study them from more depth. We have a book on the Messianic service, what it might look like if you went to something like that. It might be intimidating to you, but maybe you read this book and you walk in, you're more prepared. We have a book on how to celebrate the new moon, not how to find the new moon or anything like that, but it's about celebrating the new moon. We have books on the sources, the Jewish sources. Where do we get what we know? Why do we know what we know? Very interesting topic. So I hope that you can go onto Amazon and type in Becky Books and you'll see by various authors, you'll see all kinds of different topics that are designed to be a resource for you, a very inexpensive resource for you, so that you can hand them to your friends and family. Sometimes that is really the easiest way. I don't know about you, but typically I'm not having big in-depth conversations with family members. Maybe in the beginning I was, and that was more of a one-ended conversation. And I think we all know, and we've all been there. But generally I like to have a resource when someone asks me a question and I'm very close to that person. Now, sometimes I can answer questions. It's fine, but there's other times where people have questions and I just want to be able to hand them something that isn't necessarily from me. I know you've heard the expression that the prophet's never known in his whole hometown, not calling myself a prophet by any means, but the principle's there, that it's just generally hard with people who we can be close to. Anyway, that's just one of the reasons we wrote the books. But they're excellent authors, they're well vetted, and they can be read in basically one sitting. So go to Amazon.com and look up the Becky books and see if one of them appeals to you. I'm sure they will all appeal to you on some level. And we keep putting new ones out all the time. So that's what the Becky books are. And this show celebrates Becky books. We talk to Becky book authors. We talk to other women to hear about what ministries and testimonies and ideas that they have about how things are about what the Lord's doing in their life. And we always try to expand the scope of the Becky books by, you know, we can only put so much in the printed page to have our books be the short format that we've selected that we felt was best for you. But sometimes we want to go a little further and we want to share more. So that's what the Becky Book Show is. And that's why I'm here today. And we're going to talk about a couple of things that I think are very important. And I'm going to spend some time the first hour covering this. It's called coping. We're going to talk about coping. How do we cope with things? And what does it mean? And if we have time, we're going to discuss in the second hour, I want to share some information so that this will be posted as a podcast that you can share with people in the second hour of what it is that you're into. People can Google the things that you're studying and get all kinds of straw man arguments against what you're learning and doing, and they can be threatened and frightened. So I would like to maybe just give a cursory explanation in a podcast that you could share with somebody that would give them some information about you and what you're believing and where the direction you're headed. So that's what I'm hoping to cover today. If we don't cover everything in the second hour, that'll be its own podcast. You know how I can be. I can get going on a topic and just really feel led to just continue and just really milk that topic and maybe think the other topic deserves its own due and its own program. So we'll play it by ear, but we'll start with some coping. I want to talk about this. Now, of course, you know, I'm a therapist, so I'm constantly addressing with people in my work about coping. So this starts out with a question that you ask yourself, basically. I ask myself, what am I coping with? What are you coping with? Life is very hard. It's hard for most everyone. I have yet to meet a person that has such a charmed life that they have not had to cope. They've not had to dig deep and have to carve out a hard path in their life in one way or another. That's true for me. That's true for people in my family. You know, people we love let us down. People we love have addictions and disappoint us and hurt us. We let people down. We have our own shame stories. We have our own issues. People have neglected us. People have hurt us. You name it. Work is unfulfilling. Jobs are difficult. We can have serious health problems that are terrifying, scares and real diseases and issues and problems. And I mean, really, I could go on and on, but you get the point that coping is a universal topic because people are always coping. And things in this world are not easy. Right now, just read the newspaper, you know, or I don't think people read papers anymore, but go online and just look at the news. I mean, it's fraught with divisions and problems and complications and negativity. There's just so much going on. So the question is what are you coping with? What are the things that are the dominant threads being pulled at and tugging at your heart, breaking your heart? What is that thing that you're holding your hand so tightly and it's just being pried out of your hands and you're trying to hold on And it's terrifying. Something that you've invested in, that you love, that you care about, that you're losing. Something that's failing, a job, a marriage, something. What is it that you're coping with? What kind of hard, difficult, ongoingly challenging job are you facing every day? What's happening? Are you a new mom, or could you not have kids? I mean, it runs the gamut what people could answer that question, what people would say. But coping is something universal. It is something that we all on some level share. And it's always nice when we can share with each other, when we can be there for each other, when community is safe and actually helpful. And that doesn't mean unsolicited advice. I'm talking about true support and acceptance. That doesn't mean enabling sin. It doesn't mean looking the other way at sin. It means being there for each other to build each other up, so that we're always going to the next level of insight, the next level of love, of loving others and of loving ourselves, and the next level of forgiveness of ourselves and others. These are really important steps. One thing that I like to talk about when I talk about coping is to remember that we as people of the kingdom, we don't cope in vain, right? We don't struggle in vain. Our lives, which can be very difficult, there's always a purpose, always a purpose. I've taken graduate classes where I had to write about stress appraisal. And one of the foundational understandings of stress is that it's how we appraise it, whether it be purposeful or not, predicts the impact, negative or positive, that it will have on your body. So let me give you just a quick example to lead into our discussion about coping. So if you were in a terrifying situation, you're on a cruise ship and all the sirens are going off and there's some action on the cruise ship, or maybe on an airplane, right? That is terrifying. Turbulence, right? It's turbulent and you're afraid because you're not in control in a plane or on a cruise in the middle of the ocean. You are at the mercy of nature and of the devices that your vessels, right? You're at the mercy of these things. So these moments can be very scary. This motion can feel really scary and upsetting to you. And you get off the plane and your adrenaline has been surging, and that's a pretty good time to get a cold. I know that people can have a very strong adrenaline surge in a very stressful, upsetting situation, and then they get sick after. They were maybe, you know, we all know we're exposed to bugs and viruses on planes and trains and automobiles and cruises, and we are all we can be much more susceptible. Our blood pressure goes up. People go into like a fight situation where, you know, their blood goes to their heart and lungs and those vital organs, and they become very panicky and very scared. And they walk off the plane or the cruise and they are drained. They are just completely drained. I mean, have you been? I have, on a very stressful flight of bad, bad weather. And I remember actually was flying to, I want to say California. I think I was flying to San Francisco, and it was just horrible weather. And this was, this might have been 22 years ago. And I think planes are better now, because I have not ever experienced anything like that since, or even close to it. But I remember walking off the plane and just looking at the fellow passengers. We were very stressed. You bond over that, right? And we were just so tired and so drained. And I remember getting home and just like, I need to go to bed, and just being exhausted, because that was just such a draining experience. But contrast that with the experience of, let's say, going on a roller coaster or a fair ride, right? So you pay all this money to go to Universal Studios or wherever you're going, and then you stand in line with your friends, and you get on this device that is turbulent and it takes you in very frightening ways, like up and down, upside down, really fast, high and low, and your heart's racing and you're holding on and you're gripping. But it's how you're appraising this event that's having a different impact on your body, because when you get off the roller coaster, you're happy. Assuming you wanted to go on the roller coaster and you enjoy roller coasters, of course, that would not be me. But if you are, you step off the roller coaster and you feel refreshed. This is a break from your everyday job. This was a bonding moment for your friends in a good way. You chose this event. You wanted to be on this ride. You went on the ride and you enjoyed it and you feel good. You feel invigorated. You feel energized. You want to go on to the next ride. You want to go have lunch. You want to go do whatever for the rest of the afternoon. So you can have a very similar physiological experience with higher blood pressure, your vital organs getting blood, all the different things that adrenaline will produce in your body. But depending on the way that you perceive with your mind, the event is going to predict its impact on your body. That was a big part of a lot of the things I studied in health psychology, how your body and your mind work together, and when and basically how to mediate that in a very positive way. So you can see how we view things is a big part of how we live and how our bodies react. So understanding that as kingdom warriors and kingdom people, kingdom lovers, kingdom walkers, when we read the story of Joseph, we read that story and it's such a beautiful story, but it's fraught with such hardship, right? But we know that story. We know that even though Joseph is rejected by his family, though favored by his father, but rejected by his family, thrown into a pit, sold into slavery, rises to a high degree, is falsely accused, put in prison and again, and rises up again. And we see that story, and it's such a story of triumph. We love that story because we know what happens. So we can see the purpose in it. But what if we only read the part of the story where he's in falsely accused? If we weren't kingdom people, that wouldn't seem like such a good story. It's all about the purpose that we understand the Father has in our lives. It's about trusting the Father. Now, some things that we have to cope with, we have put ourselves in those situations and we struggle with that. And that's just how it goes. And sometimes people have let us down and hurt us. And that's something that we deal with. And sometimes we really bring ourselves into our own misfortune. It's very, very true. But I will say that when things happen to you, you're not responsible. You're not at fault. It was something done to you. It was something you didn't expect. It was something that broke your heart. Oftentimes, as we can see in almost every story in the Bible, we can see how this was an equipping process that the Father used for us to walk into our destiny. Now, that might sound trite and pat, and whatever problem you're facing, I assure you, I am not in any way trying to diminish or minimize anything that you're going through at all. But I want to point out the fact, and I mean fact, that the Father loves you and there is a purpose for your life, regardless of what mistakes you've made or where you are picking up. You might be at the end of something horrible. You might be in the middle of something. You might just be starting. I don't know where you are in your story. But it's never too late to look life right in the eye and find the purpose. Because we, if anything, are people of purpose. Our lives are not, we did not evolve from a lower form of mammal and have no purpose and have no value. We're not just the sum of our parts. We are crafted and created human beings by a loving creator of intelligence we can't even fathom. And our lives mean something. So being equipped, meaning what you're facing now, what challenge you're facing now, and I'm speaking very particularly right now, even to young people, people in their early 20s, late teens, it's really hard to be that age, even younger. I'm even gonna say to tweeners, I mean, just people in that in-between age, your peer groups, the things that you're dealing with. To young people, I really hope that you can hear this. As you struggle in your formative years, I would love you to be able to catch a glimpse and a vision of the Father putting this glittering sword in your hand through these trials so that you have the skill to fight your way out when the time comes. Because we are called to fight and we're called to stand. So equipping is extremely important. Being equipped and recognizing that our struggles are often just the phase of equipping for us to walk into our destiny and to find meaning very specifically in each moment. That can be a very difficult thing. I can speak from personal experience that as a kid, I wasn't the most popular kid in my school. And there were times when, you know, it would be Valentine's Day. And this was back when they used to put, every child would make a little Valentine's box and put it on our desk. And the kids would be able to make Valentine's and put them in the boxes. And afterwards, the teacher used to have the children walk around and look at everybody else's box. You can walk around and look at the Valentine's that your fellow students have. And of course, my box would be like, pretty much empty except for the one, you know, that one of the boys' mothers made him make for me. I didn't get a lot of the Valentines, and I'm thinking back in like fourth and fifth grade and even a little older, and I remember just sitting there and that feeling, that alone feeling. And then just even, you know, through middle school and junior high, just struggling with you know, not feeling really accepted by the bigger group. I look back now, it's so funny because I'm so glad I wasn't accepted in that bigger group. But I know this now as a grown woman, I understand this. At the time, it didn't feel good. It didn't feel good at all. But I will say that I had this innate desire to make sense of my world. That was a part of me, making sense of my world. And I know that those long moments of sitting alone, not being picked for the sports team, I'm the very last one that they would pick, and just not loving that feeling. But I think back now and I think of my life now. I think of the job that I do, right? So you're with me. Probably if you're listening, you share my beliefs. You share the crux of what we believe. That the Torah is relevant for us today. That goes against anything mainstream for the past couple thousand years in terms of the main church systems. Of course, there's always been a remnant and there always will be. This wasn't, you know, the exclusive situation. But I stand with you, you stand with me, and we stand against the basic flow of modern and cultural current. So here in the United States, that's not a very popular position to take. A lot of scholars have gotten master's and PhDs on believing just the opposite. So what does that require of me? Well, number one is to read and to study, and to be able to focus on that. Well, let me tell you, as a kid, not having a million party invitations, I'm an avid reader. And I was a very avid reader in my home. And another thing, I have to be okay with standing alone, even if I'm the only person in the room who believes and knows what I know. Well, I have some practice in that. I had to be alone. I had to be okay with myself and be alone and not have the approval of people around me and not have that be my biggest moment, right? That wasn't my biggest moment. I was not affirmed or approved of, but I had to be okay with that. Now, if I had been the most popular kid, I think I would have peaked at that age. I would have, in my formative years, felt like that's the way it's supposed to be, that everybody approves of me. But I didn't get that, so I don't expect it. So my sun doesn't rise and set on approval. I don't need approval. I can study, it can go against what other people believe, and I can stand with that. I can be okay with that. Because during my formative years, I had no other choice. And what's that excellent saying by the Prime Minister? Our best strategy is having no other options. Or having no other options is the best, can be the best strategy. It's so true. I didn't have any other door to walk through. So I had to sit alone, be okay with that, not be approved of, be okay with that, and be able to walk on. I don't regret that. That has been a big part of the reason that I am who I am and I can do what I do. So God was equipping me. The Father was actually sitting with me in those long moments. I know He felt for me. I know He was there. He was always there. And I can almost picture that He was just whispering in my ear, "This will pass and this will serve you. This will prevent you from falling apart so many times when you're older. This is okay. You are okay." I think that's really powerful in my life as part of my story of the epistemology of my life. How did I become who I am? And that's part of it. So how did I cope with those moments? Well, I read a lot. I was funny, right? Because I could make people laugh. So a little bit of that performance piece. So I'd cope that way. I danced. I had hobbies. I was very invested in hobbies, musical theater and dancing and writing poetry, all things that I still enjoy even now. And I really felt like I nurtured my creative side. And I was very, I had a lot of ingenuity. I just had a lot of curiosity and I had a lot of independence. I had friends. I had loving, caring friends that to this day I love, the ones that I was friends with. But I just didn't have that generic approval that was just implied. Wherever I went, I was just accepted. I knew that was not the case. So I know that's not the case now, and I'm just fine with it. I'm not saying that I don't ever struggle with identity or approval issues. I certainly do. But I've learned that I can even venture into challenging, really colorful environments like this one, and in the religious world, I can do that because the Father equipped me when I was forming. So let's talk about some things that people do to cope with stress. Okay, so you're going through something. And like I said, very particularly, I want to talk to young people, people in their formative years. I'd like to hear about how are you coping? Here are some things that people do. Some young people choose to cope with alcohol. And I know you know people that do that. Maybe you do that yourself. Maybe you've seen your parents do it or your friends or just other relatives cope with alcohol. Now, I'm not somebody who doesn't believe in drinking at all. Okay, so I'll just disclose that. I do believe that drinking in moderation a little bit is fine for people that can handle that and don't have a problem. There can be, I believe, a glass of wine, you know, that doesn't bother me. That's a big difference from a person who is coping with alcohol. That's how they cope with their sorrow. That's how they cope with their pain. That's how they hide from their problems. And because alcohol suppresses more of the analytical part of the brain and the limbic system is more active, which is your more primitive side, that can feel like a relief to people. If you drink alcohol, it can shut down some of those feelings that can be unpleasant. I feel lonely, so I drink. I feel left out, so I drink. I'm homesick, so I drink. I've suffered peer pressure, so I drink. These are reasons that people can drink and cope with their loneliness and cope with their problems. But alcohol is not an effective solution for your problems. Alcohol does not help you. It hurts you. First, let's just look at the physical aspects of alcohol. Alcohol is metabolized through the liver. The alcohol. Your liver is not designed to filter through that level of toxicity at a large amount daily, or even in a big binge every weekend. That's not what your liver is for. You are fearfully and wonderfully made, and that is not what you're made for. Your liver is designed to filter just, well, they say for a woman, one drink a day, and a man, two drinks a day. And that's what you can handle. When we overdo that, even though we're coping because we're heartbroken and we're in pain and we're lonely and we're lost, your liver doesn't know that. Your liver doesn't have an appraisal system that lessens the damage because it's what you wanted to do, like we spoke about earlier with the roller coaster versus the plane turbulence. Your liver gets tired and it gets ruined. And as a young person, let me tell you something about alcohol that's specific in even more than other drugs, which we'll talk about. Alcohol is everywhere. And it's very difficult to avoid once you have developed an addiction to it. Alcohol is very sneaky. So here's how to know if you're coping with alcohol. If the problems in your life are your reason to escape into alcohol, you have a problem with that. Now, I'm not saying that people don't go home and pour a glass of wine with dinner to relax. I mean, I do that. That's fine. But what happens when, is it 5 o'clock yet? Well, it's 4 o'clock. That's early enough. I need to escape. You need to take a break from alcohol if that's what you're saying to yourself, if that's what's happening. Very, very important to do that. I hope you're listening if you're young. Because while others are out living their lives productively, you are going to be finding ways to drink. You're going to be sneaking it in. You're going to be figuring it out because your usage will increase usually. And it's unhealthy. Not only that, but during these formative years, in the struggle that you're in, you are designed by your father to seek him as your solution. He will equip you. But what you're having to tolerate right now is part of your school. You need to be able to withstand this without alcohol so that you can learn from it the skills and the traits that are necessary for your future. Whatever it is that you're dealing with, whatever you're, I don't know what you're dealing with in your life. It's school. Are you in the military? What are the issues? How hard is your life? Probably hard. I am certainly never going to dismiss how hard life can be for people. I'm going to ask you to let that be hard and endure it. Seek out good help if you are using alcohol to cope with your problems. That leads me into drugs. Drugs, let's look at alcohol and drugs. Cigarettes, right? I have stress, so I inhale smoke into my breathing machine. That is not a way to cope. Your lungs are for bringing oxygen, healthy oxygen into your body to feed your cells. Not smoke. That's what you should be avoiding. Don't cope. Drugs. And you think about drugs and alcohol, cigarettes, these things are all plant-based. I heard it very effectively said to me one time that addiction is letting plants have dominion over you. When we were put on this earth to have dominion over the plants. So you can look at a common houseplant and say, wow, I'm under subjection to the likes of you because I'm addicted to whatever plant-based addiction you have. Drugs, you have to go out of your way to get. You have to buy them. You have to get them. You have to sneak them. There's no doubt that you are using drugs to cope with your problems. Again, denying the opportunity to be in the school that you're in, the school of life. Denying yourself your destiny. The struggle you're in is for a purpose, and you are to withstand it and see the fruit of standing. What is the fruit? Look at my life. I can stand where others will fall because I learned when I was forming to stay standing. And I didn't escape into alcohol, into drugs. What are some other things that people do to cope with their pain? Here's a really hard one. This is a tough one. Food. Are you an emotional eater? I think everybody at some point, or at least many people, can identify that food can be a great stress reliever. Now, it's designed to, on some level, be a festive bonding. Like people sit, they say, we'll break bread together, right? We sit and we eat together. We sit at the table and we eat together and it feels good and it's nice and it's warm and it's comforting. And really, for a lot of people, some of those most beautiful memories that they look back to is when you're a kid and you're doing your homework or you're playing your Legos and all of a sudden you smell dinner because mom made it and you just have this great reaction, a very positive reaction. So it's not that food is not a part of something good, but does it become the good thing? After the break, we're going to look at that a little bit more deeply, actually a lot more deeply. But in the meantime, we're going to take a short break. So you go ahead and get... Hi, welcome back. You are talking or listening to Dr. Robin Gould at the Becky Book Show. And we've been discussing coping. And we had just moved on to food as a coping mechanism. And I actually have a couple questions submitted. So it'll back us up a little, but I wanted to address them. So one of the questions was from a younger person, was talking about experimenting. So we had just discussed alcohol and drugs as people using alcohol and drugs to cope. And a lot of people thinking alcohol being the lesser of evils because it's so readily available, when really it's just as dangerous and damaging, if not more so, if it's misused. So what about experimenting? Is that so bad to just experiment? So here's my answer for that. And I have done a lot of research and a lot of 40-page papers, and I do feel qualified to speak on this matter, so you can trust what I'm saying. You can look this up on YouTube even. You can learn from a lot of different neuroscientists that teach about what's called the addicted brain. So I will tell you about experimentation. You do not know if you can experiment because you do not know if you have an addictive brain. There are people that have certain proclivities toward addiction. People whose very personalities and also the physical structures of their brain are more likely to become addicted. People who are super addicted to sweets or gung-ho into the things they do, like anything they do it to the limit. Those people are probably people that have addictive brains. Now, that is not a negative thing. People with addictive brains can do amazing things and push amazing things to the limit because they are just pushed to overdo things almost to the point that they become masters at things. So if you looked at Beethoven and Mozart and other people, even in modern times, that do amazing things. They describe more of an extreme personality. And that doesn't even mean you have to have an extreme personality to have an addictive brain, but that's just a sign that you probably have one. But what happens with the addictive brain, and I'll just say this in very simple terms, is that you might have the kind of brain, maybe you have a busy brain, right? You have a busy brain. You thought, well, I'm going to calm my thoughts down with alcohol. I'm just going to calm my thoughts down. And you drink something. You drink some alcohol, more than you should. And if you're underage, of course, any amount is more than you should. But let's say you drink, let's say you're 24 and you think, I'm going to drink and just calm down. And suddenly you're like, wow, I just feel so much better and clear-headed and better because I drank and I got drunk and I relaxed. It was the first time I'd relaxed in so long. The addicted brain remembers that feeling. The addicted brain you cannot logically reason with. It wants that again. It wants that feeling it had where it wasn't operating at full tilt. It was able to relax. And so that is how addictions start. People, you ever wonder why some people like pills that speed you up and some people like things that slow you down? Well, that's about their brain. It's their brain found something that it preferred to the natural state of anxiety or whatever the brain state is. Rather than using that brain structure for positive and good, we're dampening it, or we're enhancing a shy personality, or whatever we're doing, we're not operating in it for good. We are altering it. And the addicted brain is nothing to mess with. So experimenting is very dangerous. I know people who just experimented with cigarettes and they could never quit smoking. Even if it was killing them, they would be in a hospice smoking because it's such a strong addiction. Very difficult. And people think when they're younger, that would never happen to me. I would never be addicted to cigarettes. I can smoke and not get addicted. That's on a lot of tombstones, people. I want you to really listen to me. You don't know if you are one of the people that any experimentation is going to wake up the monkey, as we say. And wow, I have found something. This works. So I pray that you don't experiment and that you just trust that whatever it is that you're going through and whoever you are, that's okay. And that you lean into the wind of the changes it's going to make on you rather than resist it by dampening it or stopping it with a substance. Lean into that wind. You don't have to always change everything. Things should not be perfect. They're not supposed to be perfect. You will never learn anything. The burned hand is a learned hand. They say that in the Marine Corps, where a lot of Marines drink. But I'm saying, I hope that they will start to lessen the commonality of that. Because it's very difficult to serve our country and to have a very difficult job. But there's better ways to cope than being well known as super drinkers. So some people cannot experiment, and the addicted brain certainly cannot. And you don't know who you are. So you have to be very careful. So now back to food. Okay, so food can be a struggle for people, for a lot of people. And I want to say to you, I have such a heart for people who struggle with food. I have a heart for people who struggle with anything, to be honest. I really, really have a heart for people. I don't care what it is that you're going through. I have a heart for you. I very particularly gravitate toward people that struggle with food because food is just such a snare. And yet it can be such a wonderful thing. Like before the break, we were talking about how nice it is that, you know, oftentimes people's first date is to go out for dinner. You know, sitting and having lunch with your friends or some of your memories from school, dinner with your family, Shabbat meals. I mean, food is good. Now, if you start struggling with food, let's say that you're struggling with food, you can't stop eating, you're gaining all kinds of weight that's making you very unhealthy. What I would like to say to you is, first of all, I would like to say, God loves you. You are loved just as you are. Whatever size you are, whatever shape you are worthy and you are loved. I will say that if you're struggling with food, I'd like you to call yourself Joseph. I'd like you to say, I am Joseph. I'm in this pit and I'm struggling and I have to be okay with this because I'm going to walk out my destiny. So if you're struggling with food, discipline is right there for you to learn. Now, when I say this, please understand that I'm well aware of a lot of the neuroscience that's coming out about people's brains and food, where they actually have to pick out and find amazing strategies, really simple ones actually, but they're amazing strategies to deal with the idea of food. Your brain has a lot to do it has everything to do with coping and how we cope. And food is not the same for everybody. They've done all kinds of research where certain people don't have certain enzymes or certain facilitating and mechanical in their body. Like they actually don't have what they need in their body to know they're full. They don't feel full. That is actually a medical fact. If this is something that you're struggling with, I want to ask you to find your solutions, to find the lines you don't cross with eating, stick to those, and to realize that when it's really hard to stick to what you've found that works for you, you are learning discipline. And that once you learn that, you will walk into your destiny, you will find discipline is required, very specifically the way you learned it. Your destiny will draw on the equipping phase the Father allowed you to walk through. So I don't want you to see your struggle with food as something shameful or something unproductive. I want you to understand that your life means something. The struggles you face mean something because you mean something. You are important. You matter. You matter. So food is a very common coping mechanism. People eating lots of sugar, people eating lots of salt, eating a lot of, you know, carbohydrates that make you crave more carbohydrates. And I'm not saying don't have any carbohydrates. I'm just saying that we all know the candy path and the potato chip path. And it's almost universally known that people get depressed. They eat ice cream, right? That's sort of a universal picture we have in our minds of people coping and using food. And sometimes when we're younger, you know, our parents want to occupy us. So what do? They throw us some chicken nuggets and there you go, be happy. Here's some French fries. Here's a lollipop. And teaches us that food is our comfort rather than food is a nourishing part of our day where we bond with others. Some people, that balance is very lost on them. And it's very difficult to walk through this world with all these tempting food things around us, particularly here in the United States, we just have everything available to us. So I really stand with you if you struggle with food, but I want you to see your life as having purpose. And I want you to see your life as, and your struggle as an equipping phase, as a school. And you will benefit from the skill that you're learning, whatever it is that you have found, whether it be intermittent fasting, bright line eating, any of those things that people pick that are more healthy and not restrictive diets, like people that can live a very healthy lifestyle. When you find something that works for you to eat, for an eating pattern, and it's hard to stick to it and embrace the hard, embrace that, because it means you're learning to not be a victim. You're learning to be a victor. You're learning to be able to say no when other people couldn't, because you're going to have to say no in the future in some other way. Sex is another thing that people can use in an addictive way to fill the voids and the needs that they have of feeling loved and accepted and paid attention to. You have a lot of people that, the girls, they didn't have a present dad. And even if they did have a present dad, they had some other sort of feeling of inadequacy and using that as a tool to gain approval. Or people just being addicted to, you know, feeling, you know, the experience of sex to be, it becomes very addictive. People become very addictive to pornography. It's not that hard to face these addictions or to develop these addictions. If that's the compulsory way that we are choosing to cope. So one of the reasons I'm targeting young people is because I very much want to stop you before you start, when you're young, not when you're on your eighth round at 42. I would love to help you now, when you're just starting your relationship with food, when you're just starting out your nice clean liver, you know, and stay away from the drug dealers. Don't be promiscuous. Some people cope with like withdrawing, right? They become very isolated. That was one of the things I did a little bit. I did a lot of reading and poetry and writing, and didn't end up turning out too badly for me because I ended up getting very highly educated and I ended up doing some neat things with my attention, being a very focused person. But some people can withdraw and isolate and not be productive. Maybe they only just watch TV. And if that's a way that you cope with stress somewhat, I totally get that and understand that. But if it's too excess and you're not seeking solutions to cope, you're only escaping. It's pulling you away from the Father. It's pulling you away from your friends. That's when that can be a problem. You can become addicted to fantasy and just being completely pulled away. That doesn't mean it's bad to watch TV or these things can't be used as tools of enjoyment and entertainment. Only you know when it's replacing God and others in your life. Some people even use exercise as a way to cope. Obsessive exercise, even obsessive dieting, right? So we talked about overeating. There are people that can develop such stringent diet programs that they throw their whole bodies out of balance and it becomes like an obsession. They are literally counting every gram of calorie, obsessed with their bodies, obsessed with exercise. That perfectionism can come out, and boy, people can be extremely addicted to dieting and exercise. And just sort of that whole perfection of my body. My body has to be perfect. Everything has to, I have to do every workout till I'm just depleted and whatever. I'm going to tell you what. Over-exercising, over-dieting, that is not what your body was made for. These are not the obsessions and the compulsions that should take over our lives. We should not be allowing this. If it's on you, if you're dealing with it, if you're in bondage to this, seek help. Seek to find out what's underneath the lie that you're believing, that you're not enough unless you're perfect, as the media would portray perfection, which is a fake and unattainable photoshopped picture of a woman or a man. Exercising is healthy. Exercising and eating well are healthy things if they're done outside of an addictive pattern. Some people can just take on like a lot of busyness, right? That's another way that people cope. They just become so busy. They don't have time to think. They don't have time to even make sense of their world. They hide from their pain. They hide from their loneliness. They hide from whatever it is that they don't want to face by just being too busy. So the opposite of the withdrawer, the too busy one, needs to sit in these long moments of silence and just let the Lord be their strength. Let it be enough. Lean on Him and just have those quiet moments, because that's if a person is busy to the point of addiction, busy to the point of compulsion. That is not what busy is for. Focused and productive is very different from compulsive busy. Know the difference. Is everything busy replacing God and others in your life? That's how you can tell. People use emotional strategies to cope. We've talked about it on this show a couple of times before. People have behaviors that they employ to cope with feeling inadequate, or to prove themselves, or to earn the approval, or to express sadness. Maybe that comes out as being controlling, or maybe that comes out as being a perfectionist, like we talked about earlier, that perfectionism. I don't know. People can have all kinds of emotional strategies rather than relying on the Father. Right? You can be the angry one, the numb one, the martyr, the victim. We talked about those. These are emotional strategies where rather than relying on the Father to meet our needs, we try to meet them on our own. Sometimes we can be addicted to other people. We constantly need approval and attention of others. Community is good. We need community. It's safe, trusted others. We need that. But people can't save us. I certainly can't be to everybody what they would like me to be. All I can do is what I do. And all I can do is allocate my time as I can allocate it. It's taken me many years to understand this, because I used to believe that I was really responsible for everybody else's needs because I had the talent or the intelligence to help them. But I didn't have, that was not my calling. That person wasn't, I didn't have the time. I just didn't. And I overworked. I overdid. I had to take a big step back and say, you are addicted to approval, because it's replacing God and others in your life in a destructive way. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't like it when you pull back and say, wait, I have to set better boundaries because I'm not in balance. They don't like hearing it, because they want you to invest more than you can. And even if they're investing a lot and you can't, sometimes you just have to be honest with your abilities with people that this is what I can do. I can't do anymore. So people pick emotional strategies to dealing with things, but I'm talking about being a kingdom of people who stand in our struggles with the wind battering us from the left and the right and the front and the back, but we stand because we're going to face winds down the road that we have got to have learned to stand for. We have got to become equipped to manage our destiny. If you trust the Father, He will allow you in situations that can be unpleasant, because He is equipping you to fulfill your destiny. Let's read for a minute. If you have your Bible, let's go to Psalm 118. Turn here now. Okay, so we're at Psalm 118. And this is David, presumably. And he's hiding out, right? He's being chased. And here's what he says. So Psalm 118. Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His love endures forever. His love endures forever. Let the house of Aaron say, His love endures forever. Let those who fear the Lord say, His love endures forever. In my anguish, I cried to the Lord, and He answered me by setting me free. The Lord is with me. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? The Lord is with me. He is my helper. I will look in triumph on my enemies. So here he is talking, right? David is talking. He's actually saying he's in anguish. And when he was in anguish, it didn't say, I drank a whole bunch of alcohol and got drunk, or I took a whole bunch of drugs, or I ate 2 bags of chips and ice cream, or I had sex with 5 people, or I watched TV, or became a bodybuilder where I couldn't stop. He didn't do that. What did he do in his anguish? He cried out to the Lord. And how did the Lord answer David? It said he answered by setting me free. Since he cried out to the Lord, he was free. He wasn't in bondage to things. He wasn't in bondage to his solution. Think about that. Think about your solution being your trap because you pick something other than the Father. And he says, the Lord is with me. I won't be afraid. Because when he was alone and all he could do was call out to the Lord was there. And David will always know that. That's why David means beloved. He's beloved. And he was a man after God's own heart. Because when he was anguished, he cried to the Lord. That's the ultimate goal, I believe, of the Father making mankind, so that they would want him and he would want them. Not just in anguish, but in this case, it was in anguish that he cried to the Lord and he answered him by setting him free. And he even talks about what he's learned. In verse 8, it says, it's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. And you can just erase, not don't erase man, but you could even just say, replace man with alcohol, drugs, food, right? It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in alcohol, that's going to take care of your problems. Alcohol is a beverage. The Lord created the planetary systems, the universe, the earth, humans, the human eye, the human hand, everything. All the nations surrounded me, but in the name of the Lord, I cut them off. They surrounded me on every side, but in the name of the Lord, I cut them off. He repeats himself there. They swarmed around me like bees, but in the name of the Lord, I cut them off. I was pushed back and about to fall, but the Lord helped me. The Lord is my strength and my song. David talks about an extreme experience that he had, very painful, where he went through a lot. But what kind of king did David end up being, albeit some mistakes? Like all people make mistakes, right? Well, let's go to Psalm 132. And this is what he says. O Lord, remember David and all the hardships he endured. He swore an oath to the Lord and made a vow to the mighty one of Jacob. I will not enter my house or go to my bed. I will allow no sleep to my eyes, no slumber to my eyelids, till I find a place for the Lord, a dwelling for the mighty one of Jacob. So, as they're remembering David, they remember his hardships, but he kept his oath. So interesting. He endured his hardships and he became the king the Father wanted him to be, mistakes and all. It's very powerful to realize that that's exactly the way that works. It's very powerful. Let's think about Esther for a second. Esther, in her terrible experience and her anguish, of course, she knew her people were about to be desecrated. But she was not allowed to summon her husband, the king. She was not allowed. He had to summon her. She couldn't approach him. That sounds like pretty dire, right? But if she were not in a situation where she was not allowed to approach, would not the weight of her message be diminished? had she not overcome that restriction in her disobedience of it? She overcame it. She approached anyway. And the king knew by this very action, by this very restriction that was imposed on her in such pain, after she fasted, she bravely stepped forward and demonstrated to him, I'm doing something that puts my life in jeopardy because there's something more important at stake in my heart. If that restriction wasn't imposed on her, would not the weight of her message be missed? Because it's a very strong part of the story. If you think about it, things are not supposed to be immediately made the way they're supposed to be. There's a process. Even just you think of circumcision. If we were born without foreskins, we wouldn't get the blood covenant of cutting them off. And that sounds like a really weird example, but that is just one example of how things are alterable in the process to reflect our heart. It's important that we embrace the process. The kingdom is not just outcome. The kingdom is full of the minute pieces of the process being put together in the most beautiful way. It's a very important thing that we have to embrace and understand. I want to read you another quote that I think is interesting. It's this one of my favorite books. It's called The Sabbath by Heschel. I'm going to read this one quote here. And here is what he says. If I can find it here. Okay. While Jewish tradition offers us no definition of the concept of eternity, it tells us how to experience the taste of eternity or eternal life within time. Eternal life does not grow away from us. It is planted within us, growing beyond us. The world to come is therefore not only a posthumous condition drawing upon the soul on the morrow after its departure from the body. The essence of the world to come is Sabbath eternal, and the seventh day in time is an example of eternity. It's very interesting because it talks about how home, eternity, is planted within us. Everything we do and don't do and succumb to and don't succumb to makes all the difference in the process of absorbing and walking into our eternity. I think that is extremely, extremely powerful. Here, one more quote here from him that I think is interesting. Okay. He says, the faith of the Jew is not a way out of this world, but a way of being within and above this world, not to reject, but to surpass civilization. The Sabbath is the day on which we learn the art of surpassing civilization. I love that sentence. Our faith isn't a way out of the world. It's a way of being within and above it. We are not to be out of this world. We are born to be here, to struggle here, to toil here, to love here, live here. And we are not born to remove all of those experiences with inappropriate coping, with alcohol, with drugs, with overeating, with other things that we erect in our lives instead of leaning on the Father. I don't know what you're struggling with. I have my story, you have yours. Our hearts can be broken, horrifically broken. And in those moments, what do we do? Well, David cried in his anguish to the Lord, and the Lord set him free. And he was still basically in exile, but was still free. Because he says, what could man do to me? I don't take refuge in man. My true liberty is given by the Father. Because he severed that fear of man. He cried to the Lord. The Lord answered him specifically to his need in that struggle where he was, in the circumstances he was in. He was provided freedom. Now that sounds wonderful, we can say, reading it, but what happens when you're in the middle of a heartbreaking trial? You've lost a love, someone's died, you're sick. All I know to say is cry out to the Lord in your anguish, and he will set you free. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that is for you, but I do know that you cry out to the Lord in your anguish, and he hears you. We can resort to holding grudges and hating and drinking and tantruming. There's all kinds of things we can resort to. But are those all in vain? Yes. We have a present and living God. We have the Most High God asking us to cry out to him. For he is able. He is able to meet our needs, and he is worthy as a father to be the one that we turn to. It's something he wants. When he walked in the garden looking for Adam and Hava, the word used was not just walking. He was storming the garden to take back what mattered to him, which was man. To offer refuge, to be there for the humans he made. That's what he wants. David cried out in his anguish, and the Lord set him free. While in exile, he was free. Imagine being free in your exile, in your illness, in your horrible breakup, in whatever loss that you're facing. Imagine still being in it, but being free. I know it's not easy. And I'm not posing it as anything easy, but I can tell you it's true. Think about that for a minute. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to finish up our discussion about coping and talk about some solutions and how we can be there for each other. So I'll see you right after the break. Don't go away. Yes, welcome back. I'm glad you stuck around for our last segment. Today we're talking about coping. And we will address the other topic we were going to try to broach and start a little bit today, but I'm going to actually cover it next time. So we're going to finish up with talking about coping. We were discussing, in case you're late to the program, I'm Dr. Robin Gould, and this is the Becky Book Show. And we were talking about coping. How people cope with very challenging issues in their life, whether it be loss, death, illness, work stress, family issues, divorce, all kinds of different problems that who knows what your problem is. I stand in honor of you for listening and even pondering what is a divine way to struggle and wrestle in a world that's so difficult. So let's talk about that. A couple of things I didn't mention that were part of the addiction list that I actually wanted to bring up, because I do believe they should be mentioned, is it's actually gambling, which is a very, very damaging addiction that sacrifices yourself and others. And also, people can become extremely addicted to video games. And that doesn't mean the kid that's playing video games or the enjoying video games here and there. I'm talking about people that do it for several hours each day. They neglect their jobs. They neglect friends. A lot of people video game with their friends, but They have nothing to show for hours and hours and hours of an investment of their time, and they do it to avoid, God and others in their life. They do it as a replacement for God and others. And it doesn't build them up. It tears them down, and it actually causes your frontal lobe to idle, and it's not good for your brain to do that much. But at the same, some aren't. Video games don't do that, but a lot of them do. And it keeps people isolated and away from interaction. So that's a real artificial way to spend your time. But you know, if this is an addiction, and there are actually men who have lost their jobs over it, lost their marriages. It's more common in men than women. That's why I mentioned men, though. I'm sure women have been addicted as well. I haven't personally encountered it in my work, but that can be a problem. So we've talked about David and how he cried in anguish. Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. What does that mean, to cry in anguish? Well, I don't know exactly what it means for you. I don't know exactly what it meant for David. I don't know what that looked like. Maybe he prayed for a long time. Maybe he literally cried. Maybe he was just, I don't know exactly, which is great that you don't know, and that the text is a little ambiguous with the way that it words that. It doesn't exactly explain it. So you can't know if you're doing it wrong. But if you can just organically pursue your anguish in the sight of the Lord and seek his face, that's exactly how you can find him and how he can set you free. So I'm very excited to talk about now, like, some solutions, right? Some things that we can do for solutions. So let's see. One of the things that people can do, obviously, is we have prayer. Okay, so no one's ever going to go wrong with prayer. Seeking the Lord's face in prayer is so important. Every single day. It's the only way that we are going to enter into that heavenly realm in our anguish and actually hear from him. Very, very important. Prayer and meditation, a lot of people would call that as the same thing. And meditating can get a bad rap. You can hear people talk about meditation in a very negative way, and there is a lot of negative meditation. And I'm not advocating any negative meditation where we're emptying our mind. But stilling our mind and focusing on the face of the Lord, focusing and seeking the Lord, and being present is a very big piece of it's a very big piece of being able to sit in the moment and to absorb the moment as it is. That's a very important thing that people miss, is just being present. And so I'm hoping that when people can look at meditation as from a prayer aspect, that's not an emptying of the mind aspect. So another thing that is a very good solution to our struggles and our problems, and this is not to replace prayer and meditation. Everything I'm saying is an addition to prayer and meditation. I want to say trusted community. That's a hard word for some people because they don't have good community. They don't have trusted others. They don't know where to go. Well, I'm going to tell you, look for it. Seek out, network, and try to connect. Because interacting with like-minded people, even if it's one person, that is a mutual friendship, a mutual connection, someone that has the time and you have the time and you're together, is a very helpful way for our solution, as a solution to our struggles. We are there to uphold each other and to build each other up. Another thing that's very helpful, very helpful, and a lot of people might disagree with me because they think that let me just say this. I think some people can become so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. That saying is not lost on me. But hobbies. So some people might say, hobbies, what do you mean? Who has time to pursue hobbies when the world's falling apart? Let me just tell you something. With the world falling apart, why do you care if people have hobbies? Okay, I'm just going to take some of the judgment sting out of that. Some people have addicted brains. Doesn't always mean that's bad. Like I said, you can use that brain for good and be an amazing genius and an amazing focused individual if you so choose. It's your choice. But I will say this, pursuing positive, creative, beautiful, wonderful hobbies is not wrong. If they become an addiction, that's a whole different thing. Obviously, that's not something that I'm advocating. I'm not saying avoid God and others and take a hobby as an alternative. I'm saying that if you need a place to focus energy and funnel it, rather than addictive compulsive video gaming for 7 hours or getting smashed on alcohol and being sick, how about some of the things I might list here? Art is a beautiful way to, I don't know if you ever have just sat down, even if you have no talent, or I don't even care, but just to sit down with some paints and see what happens. For a lot of people, peace and tranquility, joy, refreshment comes over them when they're just being creative. They're just being creative. They're just seeing what happens. That can develop into something where you could become a very good artist. Practicing art. That there's a lot of undiscovered art talent in people that have addictive personalities. I'm telling you, they're some of the most amazing people out there. Join a dance class. Learn to dance, particularly women. This is, you can do Israeli dancing, you can do Davidic dancing, you can do ballet, you could do all kinds of different dance, modern dance, lyrical, classic dance. I'm a big fan of dance. That's one of the ways that I deal with stress and anxiety. I don't use it to replace God and others in my life, but I love the community with people. When it comes to dancing, with I love dancing with other women. That can be a very healthy and helpful way to focus some extra energy that you have, that, you know, you can't study every minute. Some people like to go ice skating. There are like book and reading clubs, some that are Bible-based and study books, and some are just other books that they read and compare, and you kind of get into the heads of others and see what others have going on in their lives, in their minds, the way that they view and experience literature. Obviously, study is a great way, really great way. When you're feeling overcome, just get into the Word. Just get into whatever it is. Just even pick a topic. Do some study on the temple. Do the creation gospel. Read a Becky book. Go in Bill Cloud. I mean, Brad Scott. Just get into. They have these cohesive teachings from beginning to end. You could just start one. You can get Audible books. You can get these on podcasts. You can put them in your car. And you can just relax and learn. These are pleasant people who have fleshed out some really great nuggets for you to learn from. So I'd really recommend that. Pick up the cello. Start playing the cello, the guitar, the violin, the flute, the harp. I mean, if you could ever afford a harp, I've always wanted to play the harp. What a wonderful way, though, to spend some time and invest. People that like to rock climb say they get lost in it. They get lost in rock climbing. Because while their mind was engaged in something else, because you can't focus on anything but rock climbing, and like I said, please don't fall. I'm not telling you to do anything dangerous. But people have to be so focused on that sport. They realize that the world didn't fall apart while they had that 3 hours of not thinking about their problems. So they realize they're free from their problems. It's been a tool the Lord has used in their life to help them get back to nature and to realize they're not in control of this earth. Very helpful to remember that. A lot of people can go into sewing. I know people who sew and it relaxes them greatly, and they have something to show for their efforts. You know, you're learning an instrument, you're learning dancing, you're producing art, you're having sewed items. These are all hobbies that have a tangible outcome that you can hold in your hand and see what you did. A lot of people would go into cooking. I'm a big fan of like cooking shows. and even competitions, you know, where they, these like the Great British Baking Show. I love watching these people compete with these beautiful creations. They're so artistic and beautiful. I love watching that. People, you know, ministry is always an option, particularly women's ministry, men's ministries, kids ministries. People need servants. People, women need women. Sisters need sisters. Men need men. Brothers need brothers. We need to be there for each other. We can serve in ministry. We can focus on serving others. And of course, that's, like I said, none of these are to replace prayer and study and ministry. These are all right up there. But I think that adding hobbies and things that are worthwhile, some people travel and blog about it. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with traveling and blogging about it. People like reading travel blogs. You save up your money, you go on a trip, and you write about it. It doesn't have to be, you know, to Hong Kong. You could just go 2 hours away and write about what you're doing. Start writing poetry, reading and writing poetry. There's so many different things you can do in living life that doesn't revolve around alcohol or drugs or food. And if food is your struggle, well, that's a tough one because food is everywhere. But I'm going to say this. You are in control. When you pursue freedom, the Lord will free you. I don't know how, but I know He will. He will guide your steps because if you knock, He will answer the door. He will not ignore the door. He will not walk away from the door. He answers the door. He answers your cries. David cried out to the Lord in anguish, and the Lord rescued him. The Lord made him free, and He can make you free. So look in your life at the things that you struggle with. Take a good, long, honest inventory. I do. It's not easy to face our lives sometimes. It's not easy for me. There are times I just close my eyes and I'm just overwhelmed with some of the things that are happening that, you know, no one even really knows about. But I have my own internal struggle, my own battles, the things I'm afraid of, the things that I worry about and stress about. And taking that honest personal inventory is a part of our life that we have to do. That's why keeping the Sabbath is so amazing. And that's not the only reason. It's just one of the perks. When you're keeping the Sabbath, you have this one day off. A day off from your worries, a day off from your struggles. It's like a vacation. It helps you decide what problems you re-enter and what you are stuck with and what you're enduring, what struggles are for you and what struggles are you imposing on yourself. The Sabbath is a beautiful example of just the whole idea of rest and being still and listening. Rhythms and routines are really good ways to identify if you're in a lot of struggle. Because if you have a routine, let's just say, for example, you wake up every morning at 7 o'clock and you have coffee at 8 o'clock. If you do that every day, 6 days a week, you're going to notice when you're off because you're going to have a baseline understanding of what it feels like to have coffee at 8 o'clock every day. And you'll start getting in touch with, why am I off this morning? And you do an inventory of the last day or so, and you say, oh, I had a very painful interaction with my friend, and I don't have closure. All right. You can get a base. You have a baseline of what it feels like not to struggle. And then you're much more able to pick out that you are what you are struggling about. And you move on to the next step. What's the solution? I promise you, the Father will not bring up a problem and reveal it to you that He's not given you a solution for. Now, that solution might be something you're waiting for, but He will move you forward in whatever way forward looks like for you. So you take a personal inventory of what is that thing or things that's breaking your heart. It can be very difficult having adult kids and they're making mistakes or things you wouldn't do and things you didn't want for them. Maybe it's the death of a loved one. We're struggling getting over it. We never really will on some level, because that's the price of love, but it might be our finances. It might be our jobs. We feel stuck in a job. I don't know what. There's so many different things that people deal with and struggle with and have pain over. And we're put in the position of deciding, how are we going to cope? How are we going to walk forward and face this situation, this pain, this loss? Well, I guarantee you the answer is not get drunk because I'll feel better. Because you'll destroy your liver and you'll destroy your life and the people around you that love you. Doing drugs and alcohol is not something you do just to yourself. This damage does not happen in a vacuum. You take down the people who love and invested in you right with you. Food as a crutch is not your answer either. That'll hurt your body. Becoming promiscuous. Pornography. That's not the answer. That's not going to bring you into your destiny. Escaping into constant TV. That's not going to do it either. There's nothing at the other side of that but another TV show. All the emotional strategies that we pull out, those aren't the answers. Those are more extensions of the problem. Because you drive others away, or you attract them in the wrong way. And where is the truth in all that? When we do an inventory and we decide, we discover, we're enlightened to what's really breaking our hearts, what's really the crux of my pain. When we look at that, the Lord says, cry to me in that anguish. I will answer your cry. I will set you free. That doesn't mean that problem goes away, but it means you're set free from the problem. David was still in exile, and yet he was free. No man could protect him. Wherever he was, the Lord was with him. The world to come is in you. Eternity is in you, even though we're not there yet. Nothing can take that from you. Nothing can rob you of your freedom, no matter how bad it feels. There are things that feel so bad, that we can't imagine that we can just keep living in that pain another day. People that have faced death, particularly death of a child, sometimes it's when your parents die, you don't think you can go on. And in your anguish, you cry out to the Lord. And that person doesn't come back to you, except they're with you in your memories and in your love for them. In a way, you carry them with you. But the Lord, in his mercy, can set you free from the prison of that debilitating grief. That doesn't mean these things don't wash over us and we don't have those horrible moments. Horrible moments. My father's been dead 19 years, and of course there's still a moment. I'll still have a moment where it just takes your breath away and you don't know that you'll have another breath. But I cry to the Lord in my anguish. I don't get drunk to deal with it. I don't use drugs to deal with it. I don't go eat to deal with it. I cry to the Lord in my anguish. In that moment, wherever I am, I might be in the grocery store. Who knows what triggers it? It hurts, Lord. And he hears me. And I say, like David, set me free. Even in this moment where the circumstances don't change at all, set me free anyway. And he does. lifts me right out of it. Because he reminds me that the answer is he's put in me, and that answer is him. He is my solution. He is your solution. It's good to find constructive ways to spend your time, safe, healthy, constructive ways that serves yourself and others, that serves the Lord. Things that are positive and healthy. Because if you don't, and you continue to succumb to these addictions, if you cope with drugs and alcohol, if you're coping this way, what's going to happen is everyone around you is going to be living their life. And what are you going to be doing? You're going to be seeking for ways to drink, ways to escape. And you're not free. You're in bondage. That is a bondage. You're trying to escape your problems by putting yourself in a different type of jail. When the Lord could lift you from whatever that is in that moment and set you free. Whatever you're facing today, I promise you, our God is big enough to address it in your life. And if you're a young person and you're lonely, and you're lost and you're struggling, I'm going to ask you, endure and stand tall and walk on. Lean into that wind because you are being equipped to walk your destiny. Don't do anything on your own. Let the Lord be your solution. And he will lead you to all your solutions. He'll lead you to that right person. He'll lead you to that, even that sunset, that where he speaks to you and says, I'm bigger than that problem. I'm more beautiful than the ugliness of that problem. You can face what this is, as painful as it is, and as much as you feel like you've lost, you can't lose me, except that you want to let go of me. Freedom is real, and it's there for the taking because the Father will give it to you. I am not trivializing your pain or mine. Our pain can take us down. It can paralyze us. It can polarize the love in our lives. The pain in our lives can create such hate. We can cope in all of these unhealthy ways. Or we can cry in our anguish to the Lord and find freedom that was always there. Because our God is the God who provides the remedy before the sickness. Whatever you're facing, as painful as it is. And I can only imagine the pain you might be facing right now. The solution is number one, that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob loves you. That there's a door he's on the other side of, and all you need do is knock. He opens it. And there's nothing too big for him to set you free from. Please be encouraged today. The King of Kings and Lord of Lords is for you. He is fighting for you. Walk into your destiny. Don't walk into addictions. Walk into hope and a future. I'm so thankful that you are with me. This is a little bit more of an intense week for us, but I really felt like this just needed to be said. I felt like people need to hear. Our God is bigger and better than anything that's bad and horrible. I pray that this blessed you today. I thank you for listening to the Becky Book Show. I'm Dr. Robin Gould. Please go on to Amazon.com and get yourself some Becky books and pass them around. They're very affordable and they're an excellent resource. Until next week, when we meet again, I want to bid you shalom in every way. And remember, the Father loves you. Thank you, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.